So welcome to our open coaching call for, I think this is the first one for August since I was away. I just got back yesterday late. It was quite an adventure being gone, but I missed you guys. I missed these calls and I missed hanging out and helping and looking at labs and all that sort of stuff. So I'm back. And these calls, for those of you who are new, Jane, have you been on any calls before?
No, this is my very first one.
Very first one. Yay. So yeah. Welcome. I'm so excited
Thank
to
you.
Have you. Welcome to the program. You want to just introduce yourself and let people know a little bit about you and where you're from and what you're...
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I live in Brisbane in Australia. So I've just joined this course. I actually chatted with Jan. That's how I got in. But I was going to originally do the energy recharge circle, but, for my own health, but then I knew that I had a view to work in this in the future. So I've ended up just joining straight up for the NEPT, course. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited. Yeah. So I've had my own health challenges over the last 10 years, which are slowly getting better, but I guess that's one of the main reasons I'm here as well.
Great. So you've done some digging and some searching and lots of nutritional work for it. Yeah. And that happens to a lot of folks, is that they come to the program because they've had their own health challenges and searched and searched and tried to get help. And then they say, I want to do this and help others. And so I think it was Laura that went that same thing. Should I join ERC? Should I join NEPT? What should I do? And so, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to submit your own case studies to these calls. Yeah. Everybody learns from it. Laura does that a lot. Janet's submitting some stuff for her daughter. Isabel's done, a lot of people have done it. Just submit your own stuff and it helps you to learn. It helps everybody else to learn. So there are programs out there that say, nope, you'll have to submit client stuff. You're not allowed to submit your own. You have to go join another program to do that. But I feel like, you know, our whole goal here is to learn from each other. I don't even see myself. Oh, there I am. All right. There we are. Hi.
Oh, yay.
I didn't know I was muted on anyway. But yeah, I feel like we're here to learn, and we learn best from real world application. We learn best when we have a real person. And personally, I like it best when I have the person whose lab I'm looking at or whose case I'm looking at on the call with me. Because it's not a matter of, okay, Jane, go ask this question and that question and that question. And then 2 weeks later, you come back with the answers. And I go, oh, but that answer asked me about this question. So it helps, I think, everybody to see the line of reasoning that we go through when the person's actually there and I can ask those questions. And sometimes calls go long because we actually have the person there and I'm like, okay, I'm stumped by this. Okay, what about this? And let's look at this. And so that's my goal with this, is that I want you guys to have real practical, real world stuff, not just book knowledge. Because when I got out of school, it was book knowledge. You know, and then I had my internship for 3 months, but 3 months of an internship compared to, you know, all the stuff that you really need to learn. So you really learn on the job and in the trenches. So anyway, my little spiel. So thank you. I'm excited to have you here.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Great. So we have a couple of things. So the way these calls are for any questions you have. It could be questions about the curriculum, about a particular module you're in. It could be a lab that you've submitted and you want help with reviewing it. It's not for full cases. So the full cases are actually separate, and we usually do 2 to 3 cases on each of those calls because it takes a lot. But this is more for, okay, let's spot check. Like Janet, we'd gone through some of her, this is actually her daughter's stuff at a previous event. Actually, it was at the live retreat. And so she's coming back with some further stuff. And then there was Chet. Where's Chet? There's Chet. Chet submitted a case, and I have. So I'm going to start with Chet's while Janet gets her stuff sent. And then Chet has a Dutch test. Dutch tests in and of themselves take quite, you know, they're not just a quick look at a couple of things and figure it out. It takes some stuff. And every single Dutch test, you learn something new, because every single test is a different person and different ratios and different presentations. So it's kind of cool to go through. So Chet, are you there? I'm going to unmute you. And I have some questions. I'm going to do a share screen. And let me find the window where I have Chet's. Okay, let me just see it. There it is. Okay, so this was...
Can I share something really quick?
Absolutely.
I shared it with you this morning in terms of what's available now as Zoom participants.
Oh,
so if you click on where it says participants, you'll see that you'll have this little colorful array of options. One is raise hand. Dr. Rita Marie can ask us all a question, and have, rather than have everybody jump in and say yes or no or mixed, you'll see where there's, you can do a yes as a check mark or no. It's a red circle with an X. If somebody is talking too fast, there's a button that says go slower.
Who would be that?
If somebody else is talking and you're like, okay, let's speed it up, talk faster, you can do that. Under more, there's thumbs down, thumbs up, if you want to applause. If this is a really long, like a virtual weekend call or something and you need to take a break, there's that. If you're going to be stepping away for a while, there's that button. So I just wanted to share with you that we have these new features. So
nice
that you like it. Those. Yeah.
I like it. Cause before we were, yeah, it was harder to figure that out. I like it. The ghost, nobody's allowed to say go slower. Cause I don't know if I can, but on the other hand, but the need for a break is an important one. Cause I've been known to do 7 hour all day webinars, not with practitioners, with clients where we didn't take a break, where they were genetics, and I just kept going. And of course they took breaks because most people have to pee before 7 hours is up, but I just kept going and then realized, oh, 7 hours went by. So yes, need break is a good one. All right. So Chet, you there? Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. That's great. Chet, you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this person. This person's a 41-year-old female, and she's got some interesting results. So I want to find out, is she on any bioidentical hormones at this point or on any kind of medications? Nothing.
No, she's not on anything. She came to me originally because she had a lot of GI symptoms, like, you know, the usual symptoms, like, you know, not feeling well in the stomach, food sensitivities. And so we got that out of the way, and she started feeling better with, you know, going gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, and some of the allergens took away from her diet. But then she had a history of menstrual migraine, and it got better in between. But then, you know, it's, she says that it's really, really getting to me. I just, you know, have this horrible, horrible migraine during the time of the periods or just kind of before and after. And then, she has a lot of, I mean, she doesn't have a lot of stress, but she does have a lot of anxiety and, you know, not depression, but, worries a lot. She tries to maintain a good lifestyle overall. And the sleep, not necessarily not sleeping, but not enough, just because of not having a good pattern of sleep. So then I said, you know, there's too many adrenal things going on and probably some hormonal issues. I just ordered the Dutch test. So.
Okay. So she's not on progesterone. She's not taking progesterone cream that she hasn't told.
No.
Okay.
No, she's not on any supplements, meaning as far as the hormones are concerned.
So, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now pregnenolone?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Good. So the reason I ask is it's really rare to see progesterone dominance, right? Dominance a lot, but she's progesterone dominant. So the first thing I thought is, oh, she must be on some hormones, right? Especially because her testosterone is right in the same range as her estrogen. For those of you who haven't seen these wheels, these are great. I love the graphical way they show it because you can see what the ranges are and where they fall, and you can actually compare the hormones. So she's at the high end of the range for progesterone. Now, does she have any other PMS symptoms other than the headaches? Does she get depressed? Does she get, you know, food cravings, things like that?
She does get food cravings. She doesn't say about much about anxiety or depression, but the migraine is so horrible. Like she
may not even notice.
Maybe not.
She made me feel like she's depressed because she has a headache and she can't
sleep.
Because PMSD, PMSP, you know, D, which is PMS with depression, is oftentimes related to progesterone dominance. So that's the thing I would be looking at. Now, it's unusual, right? Because there's so many xenoestrogens in the environment and all, we do the opposite, right? So when I look at her adrenals, she's like super over the top, like a stage one adrenal, right? She's yeah. high end when she wakes up. She's very high when she's at the end. She drops down at night. So maybe she's not having trouble sleeping. Maybe it's just her pattern because she does drop down significantly. When I see a big rise like that in the afternoon, I'm frequently looking at what are they eating at lunchtime? Because if they're eating something that's high carb and it causes a high sugar rise and a high insulin secretion, and then the insulin drops their blood sugar down, the body is going to try to compensate for that by producing more cortisol to bring the blood sugar back up. So you might want to have her get a meter and start looking at that and really look at what is she eating for lunch. And it may not seem like a high carbohydrate meal, but it might be too high a carbohydrate meal for her, right? Okay. So that's the kind of stuff I would be looking at in terms of that late afternoon pattern. Or is it something that happens at work? Is it something that happens in the afternoon? Does she at home with children? I mean, maybe she has some young children and she's home and children, and then the kids get home from school in the afternoon and suddenly her peaceful day is a disaster because now she's got to deal with these screaming kids. So those are the kind of questions that you'd want to ask her. What's her situation in terms of kids and job and all that?
Okay.
Okay. Do you know like any of that? Do you know what?
No, she doesn't have children, but I don't remember asking her about the meal. I mean, recently. I may have done it in the beginning, but not in the recently. Yeah. What happens in the afternoon? I haven't seen it after this test, so.
Okay. Yeah. So ask her questions about what is she eating? Like have her do a food recall. What'd she eat for lunch today or yesterday, depending on the time of day you speak to her? So tell me exactly what you ate.
Okay.
Okay, and that way you get to see. So introducing a glucose meter could be helpful if there is a problem with that, if that's why it's going up. But she's also high first thing in the morning, right? So the other things we look at with high first thing in the morning is what's going on during the night. Is she tossing and turning? Is she stressing? Is she worrying about something? Has she had a history in the past of abuse or of a father, you know, and a mother fighting in the middle of the night and waking her up as a child? And so she gets fearful in the night, and that creates a loop, a neurological loop in the brain. So I'd be looking at those kind of things, adverse childhood events, those, if you have the ACEs quiz, you might start doing that with all your patients. I mean, I think all doctors should be doing that ACEs test on people. Because it makes a huge difference and it can be creating that pattern. So she's stressed out. She's pretty normal at the beginning of the day. So she's not going up as much as you would expect her to, right? If this was normal, she wouldn't be going up as far. But see where it's at now, you would expect her to follow the line. But she's not, right? So you want to see why. It's starting to come down, but then it goes, instead of coming down in the middle of the day, it's going up again. Right? So all of this stuff about lifestyle. Now, it's pretty even between the free testosterone and cortisol and the metabolized, which means that it's not like she's making very little and just like expending it. It's like she's making plenty and she's also utilizing plenty in terms of the free. Sometimes what we see here is that they have a low metabolized and a high free, which means, oh boy, they're really heading to adrenal burnout pretty quickly because they're using up more than they're making. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Her DHEA is pretty darn normal, pretty darn good, right? So here's the thing we don't usually see with such high cortisol levels. We usually see the DHEA is starting to come down, and we see the progesterone down because the progesterone's a precursor, and we're utilizing it. So she's got plenty of progesterone, not sure why. So that's something to be kind of thinking about. I'm not sure what the answer is at this point. Okay. So when we look at her estrogen, I'm going to skip these numbers because you can look at these, but the numbers, I really think that the graphical stuff is much easier to read, right? So when we look at progesterone, it's the alpha pregnenadiol versus the beta pregnenadiol. So you go, okay, why is one so much higher than the other? right? So you would want to look at this little chart, which is hard to see because it's off to the side, but I highly recommend you print this off. Now, we have this in last year's Shine. So those of you who are new or never run this test before, you can go back to last year's Shine. It was in the notebook, but it's also in the digital. So you can download this chart. Love this chart. It's very complicated. Let me see if I can rotate it so we can see it better. So let's see. Rotate. View. Rotate view. There we go. So I want to go counterclockwise. There we go. So what we want to do is look at, okay, so we have pregnenolone, which is a precursor, goes down to progesterone. One side goes to the pregnenodiol and one side goes to alpha pregnenodiol and one goes to the beta. So she is low in, which did we say she was low in? Higher in is the alpha.
Alpha.
Okay, so sometimes when we look at this, if she was high in the beta, I'd be looking at 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. But she's right. The opposite of that, yeah. Right? She's actually higher in the alpha. So wait, sorry. Which did we say she was higher in? Now I forget.
You're right. It's alpha.
She is higher in alpha. So we would look at 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, right? So she might be low in some of the nutrients that she needs here. And also look, it's also associated with PCOS, which would be related to what? What about blood sugar?
Oh, insulin resistance.
Insulin resistance, right? So again, you know, right at the beginning, I looked at the pattern and said, hey, we want to have a look at her blood sugar. Make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So here you go right here. It says right here on this chart, 5-alpha reductase can be decreased by saw palmetto, nettles, pygium, ECGC, which is from green tea, progesterone, which clearly we don't want to add progesterone, right? Zinc and other medications. So, I think looking at some of these things, like what is her zinc status? Does she have other signs of zinc deficiency? Mm-hmm. We have a nice little chart, a mineral assessment that you could use with her, right? Yeah, you can go get a NutriVal test or any of those things. But let's start with the really simple things, like just have her just look to see what other symptoms she might be having that are related to zinc deficiency, right? Mm-hmm. So I would be looking at that saw palmetto. Saw palmetto may help to shift the ratios of estrogen, which we're going to see in a bit, is a real problem with her. So this chart might seem really overwhelming at first, but it's so great because once you see the imbalances, you can follow through. It gives you a lot of the cofactors and the ways that these things work. So even some of the SNPs are here, which we're not going to get into now, but even some of, you know, if you were looking at her genetics and say, oh, no wonder she's got this CYP3A4. So while I'm here on this chart, I'm going to go from what I remember of looking at before. She was extraordinarily high in 16-hydroxyestrogen, which is dangerous, right? So she's at risk of breast cancer. That's a proliferative one. And the ratio is way high, like very much higher than it should be. And we'll look at that in a moment. So what I'd be looking at is what's causing this to not, this is a decrease, what's causing it to increase. And I don't see anything listed to, wait, this decreases it. Yeah, so this decreases it. So if we're looking at, she's got an overactive CYP3A4. What are some of the things that decrease it, right? So we look at grapefruit, noni, pomegranate juice, peppermint oil, antifungals, valerian. Not that you're going to just take and like just rotely take things off a chart and do it, but you start thinking, okay, what are some of these things that we can start to do to help slow down the activity of this enzyme, right? She's got a lot less 2-hydroxy than she should. So what do we have to do to increase the activity of this CYP1A1? Well, here it just says it right here. Cruciferous veggies, DIM, I3C, and berries. Now, the DIM and the I3C can be very potent and decrease overall the estrogens. So since her total estrogen is not very high, we may not want to go, you know, too therapeutically there. But the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli sprouts in particular, the sulforaphane foods, right? Berries, mm-hmm. where you can start to work with the food. Okay? Is this making sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So she's low here, and we'll look at that chart in a minute, and very high here. So it's putting her at risk of breast cancer. So you want to protect her. You want to really be careful about what she's eating and what she's exposed to and the environmental toxicity that xenoestrogens, et cetera. Mm. Back to clockwise. So it goes back. Okay. So if we look, is everybody with me so far? Am I going too fast? I haven't seen any too fast yet, but everybody good? Okay. So we're going to go to this page further down on this page. Her DHEA is pretty good, but her testosterone is a little bit on the lower side of the normal range. Not a problem, but, you know, DHEA can get converted to testosterone. So we can go back to our chart, which I'll go back to in a minute because I want to finish the estrogens first, and see if there are particular pathways that we might be looking at being blocked, right? Okay. So this is the difference between a functional approach versus a, you know, black or white, mm-hmm. normal or abnormal. We're looking at the ratios of these different metabolic components to see, well, why is this one slow? Why is this one high? What are the nutrients? What are the cofactors? What are some of the things that we need to help push this along and help her naturally? You know, because this isn't a clear cut, like, oh yeah, look, her estrogen's low. We're just going to give her some estrogen, or progesterone's low. Let's just give it to her. This is complicated case here, right? She's got some interesting looking results. So if we look on the testosterone side, it's a little on the low side, but it's balanced. The 5-alpha and the 5-beta are balanced. So she's got decent 5-alpha reductase activity here, but interesting, but she has less than optimal 5-alpha reductase activity over here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when we look at estrogen, right, look at estrone, very low. Estradiol, very low, but estriol, the protective one, is high. So now she's got this, the opposite of the 16:2 ratio. Oh, the estriol ratio is very protective. If we were to do her estrogen quotient, which we do by adding estrone plus estradiol, that should be equal to or less than estriol. And at this point, we're looking at its estriol is more than double. So it's very protective.
Yeah.
Right. But again, look, it's the CYP3A4 that's doing that. So we want to be careful because if her total estrogens are not, super high, we want to be careful about doing too much in the way of DIM or I3C because they can actually bring down the estrogens. And we've used them a lot more when we see somebody off the charts in estrogen. Now let me ask you this. In terms of these headaches, how is this something she's had her whole life, or is this something that's developed recently?
Yeah, so she's had it for a long time, but it's gotten worse over the last 3 months.
And is she getting, she's 41, so she shouldn't be necessarily perimenopausal yet, but is she starting to see irregularities in her periods, hot flashes, any other signs that she might be starting into menses, menstrual?
No hot flashes, but some irregularities, yes. I don't remember exactly what the irregularities are, but no hot flashes and none of the perimenopausal signs that I can
Okay. So does she, I would find out on, in terms of the irregularity, some people are irregular their whole life. So maybe that she's always had that, but if she's just starting to get that way, one thing you could do to see if she is starting to become menopausal is you would do FSH and LH, right? Because those start to start really high. Mm. Right. So that's another thing to either rule out or rule in that she's starting to go into menopause. Because, some people do it early. I had a sister who did it at 35 or 37 or something like that, right? It does happen, right? Because she's in she's getting close down here. She's in the perimenopausal range for estrone and estradiol. So what she's got positive going for her is this estriol being high, okay? And I always do an estrogen quotient. I always do that because it gives me an idea. Sometimes I see them in the range of like 3 and 4, which is bad. It should be 1 or less. Okay.
So does she have this enzyme activity, which is more the CYP3A4? Is that why she's converting from, even though her E2 is less,
yep,
she's converting to a lot of estriol?
It could very well be. So looking at some of the things that would slow down that activity might help her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's both of these, right? This is good and this is not so good. So they hopefully are balancing her out in terms of proliferation and risk for breast cancer. But, you know, you just don't want to see this 16 so high. So here's what it should look like. This is the pie chart, right? The two should be like 75%, well, 70% of it. The four only 10 and the 16, 20. And hers is only 21% two, 11% four. So it's a little high on the four, and that's the more dangerous metabolite. And then the 16 is off the charts.
And the two is very low.
And the two is very low. And the two is the protective.
Right. Okay.
Right. So where she has good estriol as a protection, her two is low. So we don't have any quantification of that as to how much they balance each other out. But we definitely want to see her feeling better, and this could all be contributing to the headaches. I don't have any way to say, oh yeah, look at that ratio, that's, you know, been found to be associated with menstrual headaches. But clearly, there's a pattern here that's not good. Did she do it? Does it say? No, she didn't. Did she do it on the day 19, 20 of her period? Like she was
supposed to?
Find out, make sure. I mean, they do say that in the kit. They'll say, make sure you do 19 or 20. But if she was to do it at a different time, I mean, this is when the progesterone starts to make its way down. I don't know if there's a chart here. Let me see if there's one of those cool little daily cortisol. No, I don't see it. Oh, okay. So here's some stuff to look at too. She had not anything. So what did we say?
Mm-hmm.
PCOS. So she does have, she suspects that she has it. Okay. I'd get her a glucose meter and start monitoring and take her through a 30-day metabolic reset. That can help dramatically. And look at that lunch and make sure that lunch is really solid with low carb, you know, good balance of protein fat.
Mm-hmm.
And not too much protein. So here's the thing. A lot of people go, oh yeah, we'll just put people on a lot of protein for insulin resistance or blood sugar imbalances. Not a good idea, because excess protein over what you need to rebuild and make enzymes is going to get converted to the branch chains are all going to get converted to sugar. So people think, oh, look, I'm eating, you know, 150 grams of protein every day. I can't have blood sugar problems. Well, yeah, you can, because if you're, you know, 120-pound woman and you need 60 grams of protein, the rest of that is running the risk of getting converted to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff's really important to look at. So she does have some vaginal dryness. So that's a sign of going into menopause, tender fibrocystic breasts. Heavy bleeding. So these are, we don't know if it's estrogen. No hot flashes and that stuff. So a little bit of androgen deficiency, estrogen excess might, I don't know that that's really necessarily, because you see breasts with progesterone as well. Trouble staying asleep, not necessarily falling asleep, but she only rates it one, depression one, anxiety one.
Yeah.
Migraines are super high.
Mm-hmm.
So she is definitely overweight. How much overweight is she?
I don't have a file in front of me.
Okay. Your visual of her.
She is, I would say about 10, 15 pounds. I don't know if she's 20 pounds overweight, I guess.
Okay.
She's a tall lady. No.
All right. Good. But she has frequent yeast infections, right? So we want to be looking at the flora. You want to look at...
Right.
How's her gut flora? I mean, you can do temporary symptomatic stuff for frequent vaginal yeast infections. You can do probiotic implants so that she gets the right stuff. But that's, you know, really not getting necessarily at the cause. But
I don't think that's new. I don't, meaning recent, because she's made a lot of changes in her diet, like taking off gluten, even sugar. We talked about it. So I'm not sure if she's generalized everything that she's had before. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that often happens. So you may have already helped her get stuff to improve.
She is on probiotics, and she's already on it. Yep.
Good. And the struggling to lose weight. That's another thing, that last 20 pounds that you can't lose is oftentimes related to the insulin resistance. So there's a lot of stuff here pointing to insulin resistance.
Right. I did check her A1C. I don't remember the number, but it was definitely around 5.3 or 5.4. Okay, and so then, and her, what's the other one I was thinking of, just for insulin? My head. Insulin levels I haven't done because, I was going to do her thyroid. I was going to say, I did the whole panel, like the antibodies and everything. It came out okay, meaning it was in the optimal range. It was not really high. So her T4, T3, T3.
So she had that right ratio. Did you put it on that chart? You know that,
I know. I have to do that. I haven't done that.
Because that'll show subtle, like even if they're both in the optimal range, but one's higher, one's lower, it could be a conversion issue there. But I'm thinking that maybe she's in the hyperinsulinemia state, especially if she's in a low blood sugar dip in the afternoon after a meal. So I would check her fasting insulin. You know, sometimes it's a big shock when you test insulin and it's like 30.
Right. Sure, I will. Yeah.
She had an ovarian cyst surgically removed, periodic pain in that side over the years. Nothing as bad as then. Okay. And then, okay, so this is supplements. And this is stuff that what you've put her on, or is this stuff that she...
She's taken it herself.
Before. Okay. So multi HCL with pepsin, krill oil, candida cleanse. Is that something she's taken on a regular basis? So she looks like she tried to address her gut.
Yeah. This was recent. So.
Okay.
Dragon extract. Yeah.
Okay. Kombucha, you might want to talk to her about watching that. So she's clearly had digestive stuff that she's...
Plenty. And it got so much better once we talked about it. So that was the first thing.
Yeah. It's great that she's very proactive about giving
us information. So irregular was the one. I had irregular over 3 weeks and pretty heavy period. So
So she wasn't getting the menstrual migraines until more recently. Is that correct?
Yeah, she had it before, but not as much. It's just gotten worse.
It's gotten worse.
Yeah, so in the past, she had often that stopped, and then it started again.
I would also look at what about the diet, what kind of things were added? I'm adding all this great food, but maybe there's a sensitivity or... an oxalate thing or something like that. So I would look at what are the foods that she's added and increased the time that you've worked together. So let's go back up here. So clearly, heart math, tapping, any sorts of stress stuff, but finding out why, do the ACEs study, see if there's something there that's causing, maybe an old trauma that's causing an elevation, but it could be a blood sugar thing, right? It could be that the blood sugar is dipping and then the cortisol is coming in to pull it back up. Okay. I'm a big fan of looking at blood sugar with this person.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we were doing one by one. The first thing when she said about this, we kind of didn't go into that, but probably would have been the next thing.
Yeah. In general, when people come in, I don't want to be like I just do the blood sugar stuff, but so many things are dependent on the appropriate blood sugar. So anytime I hear any of that right from the beginning, it doesn't hurt to try a 30-day metabolic reset, even if they won't do the blood sugar testing. The testing, of course, is the best because that way you can know exactly. But if you just take the metabolic reset at a glance document that you have in the insulin program,
yeah,
just get her to follow it for 30 days. Most people are willing if you give them like, you're going to do this for 30 days, I'll tell you what to do.
She would be willing to do it. I know it. I just have to give her the plan.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, so going back to the estrogen, I'd be certainly looking at the cruciferous as long as she tolerates them. Broccoli sprouts, even broccoli sprout extract to throw into her smoothies or soups or salad dressings. It's very mild tasting. It doesn't have any bad flavor. You can get it in powder and she can get her levels up. So you got to get these ratios. Looking at the CYP3A4 and seeing some of those things that will slow it down a little bit would be helpful. Some 5-alpha reductase inhibitors just to shift the ratio here. I wouldn't overdo it, so check her zinc status. That's the one I usually start with. A lot of times it's the omegas, omega-3s, 6 ratio, and it could be that she's got not enough of GLA. So borage oil is often helpful there, borage or blackcurrant or evening primrose. You know, just play around with some of those. Saw palmetto, I don't use it as much with women, but I think it can be very helpful. I usually start with the zinc and the saw palmetto. I mean, the omega-6, the GLA.
Okay.
Okay, and then her melatonin. Here, melatonin is in a good range, at least upon waking. We don't know what it is at night, but it's a decent range. I would make sure that she's doing things to pull her melatonin back down during the day. So getting out in the sunlight, you know, early in the morning, at least 5 minutes, just go out there and do some meditation or heart math or something with the sun coming into the eyes, some kind of outdoor activity before noon, at least to bring the melatonin into the right range. And then I want to look at the free cortisol, cortisone. Okay. Wow, look at all this. So here, you know, I think about cortisone as the inactive. I mean, I think this person is not at risk of going into stage 3 adrenal fatigue anytime soon.
Okay.
Because if you look at her cortisone, it's through the roof.
Yeah.
It's off the charts, and her cortisol is what she's actually utilizing is, you know, so she's got good reserves. You keep her away from anything stimulating. I'd keep her away from licorice, no licorice for this person. I'd be careful with anything like ginseng or any of those because they could be stimulating, although most of the time they're going to be adaptogenic, meaning they're going to go in the direction she needs to go in. But yeah, her levels are off the charts, which is kind of interesting. Let me just look really quickly again at the estrogen. What does it say for the total estrogen on the first page? Yeah, in spite of using so many precursors for making all this cortisone and cortisol, she's got decent levels of all her hormones. So she's got this robustness. Now, have you checked her cholesterol?
I have.
Yeah?
I can't remember now.
Okay. So it wasn't anything noteworthy, like it wasn't super high or super low. Okay. Yeah. And you know, so sometimes she's just got good activity. She's probably I wouldn't give her any B5 because B5 is going to help convert more of the cholesterol into these hormones. She's got plenty of these here. They just have to be manipulated somehow to get into the right range.
Right.
Okay. So some of those things, you know, and it might be a little bit of trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, try this, try that. Let's see. You've got this major symptom that you're going to know. You don't have to rush and do a test like this every month to see it because you've got a symptom that if you get these balanced is going to significantly
shift.
Yeah. Okay, any questions, comments? Is this helpful?
It is. I mean, I don't even know how to read them. This is the first time I'm doing a Dutch test, so this is very useful. So probably questions will come once I start talking to her and
doing this. Yeah, and asking lots of questions. They do have some good videos on the site, and I think at the end of the report they give you some links to some of the videos. So I think it's in
here. I'll go and watch them too, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really watched them much. I dug in and just did this, but I've done some, obviously. But it's just I was doing the 24-hour Meridian Valley test for a long time, and a lot of the metabolites are similar, so a lot of it transfers. Mm. But I really like this better just because you get so much more information.
Yeah, I have recently ordered at least, I would say, 5 or even more.
Oh, good.
So
what I would suggest then is the next one you get back.
Yes.
Is that you review it first and take some notes as to what you think, and then bring it to a call. Because that way you're going to get a lot more experience. Mm-hmm. You know, when you do it, you get a lot more than you sit back and listen to somebody else do it. You go, what did you
say? Oh, yeah. It's just that I just wanted to know how you think, which I wasn't clear of. So now I have an idea to go over the chart and, you know, the way to process. So.
Yeah. And I find it interesting, like, it's really cool to go through this without knowing much about the person, because right away we went, oh, PCOS problem or insulin. And then when we looked at her notes and been suspecting that for a while. So you really can get a lot out of these tests. It's really phenomenal, their metabolism. And then studying this thing, I would, you know, take it out, print it.
Yeah, I have the one we got for the
one. Check to see if it's the same, because it looks like there's some extra. I'm not sure I remember all of this. They may have updated it. Let's see if there's a date on it. Just check to see, because I don't remember seeing that 5-alpha reductase thing on there before. But maybe I just, you know, was focused on other things. Because other factors. Yeah. It's a great chart. It's a great learning tool. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right. So we've got that one. I'll close it. No, close current tab. And this was Chet's, right? Oh, no, that's, let's see. This is Chet's. Okay. So Janet, you're up. Did we get Janet's thing?
Yep. So she actually had 2 that I've uploaded into the Dropbox. Okay. One is her 401H from BioHealth.
Okay.
The Hakala was actually just a picture. It was a snapshot of the report.
Oh, okay. So I didn't think about opening it with a picture editor, but is that
No, it didn't. It wasn't there. She had to resend it. So I uploaded that, and it should be, if you refresh her file, it should be there.
Yeah, I see it. It's right there. Okay. So let me open that. And then I see the BioHealth as well. When it's working properly, the Dropbox syncs pretty quickly. it's when it's not. Okay. So let's just review a little bit. I've got Janet's little notes here. So we talked about, we went over, those of you who were at the retreat, we went over Janet's daughter's case. She was to explain, give me some background again, just refresh us. She was in the hospital. She was having a lot of issues with
her
gut and couldn't keep food down, and she was losing weight. So tell us more. You found some gut bugs.
Right. We did.
Okay. So anything more you want to add to that before we...
Her symptoms are better. Her metoprolol is working for her heart events, and they're quite low now. Of course, we did finally get rid of the diarrhea, which lasted for 27 days.
Oh, my.
We had a really hard time with that. So this enterobacterial cloacea or whatever that is probably what we were looking at, although I think you have the Hochul report. No, you have this one. So she is better. She has some of her energy back. I have her on a low FODMAP diet. I've been on a couple of calls with Steph, and we're working on a rotation of some herbs for her, the 5-day, 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 and then off 2 weeks.
Good.
And we also sent away and got, pronounce the name of that, the crypto
license.
Right.
Yep.
That one we haven't started yet because I wanted you to look at these last two tests that were suggested when I was in Tampa. We got them done and back and kind of see where we are, if everything is in sync that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so she collected this 621, so just a couple of weeks after we returned. And this was... Okay, and you, when did you start the rotation of those herbs?
We just started it. Her stomach has still been so sensitive. I just go very slow with everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
she started with cinnamon. At Golden Seal, I couldn't find berberine, mm-hmm. Which they suggested.
Well, Golden Seal is a very good source of berberine. I usually don't use Golden Seal just because it's protected.
Right. You know. I know. And I hated to do that.
Well,
but
berberine, you can get, there's ways to get it. So use what you've got, but you can get berberine from Thorn Research has Berber 500. And that's okay. From a combination of, I think it's Oregon grape and goldenrod or a couple of others.
Okay.
So you can get that. And then there's a, if she prefers or does better with tinctures, I think it's not eclectic, but if you go on Emerson Ecologics, they have a liquid from one of the better companies.
Okay.
Tincture of berberine. So either way you can go with that.
Okay.
And then you can just do straight Oregon grape, which is not endangered.
Okay.
And it's a good source as well. Yeah. You know.
The third one was rosemary. Mm-hmm. And the spicy spices we've taken out of her diet because it really upsets her system. She just gets heartburn so bad, which then we can't decide whether it's an event or a heartburn. Mm. So I didn't put her on the rosemary yet. So I was curious about that, if there was something else that might work in that rotation of three.
Yeah. So you've got the berberine, well, the cryptolepsis.
Well, the cryptolepsis was one that was not an, I was going to put it in the rotation of three, but I'd like to use it as a straight treatment and leave the other rotation of three on their own.
Okay, so there's a couple ways to do it. One is to do a sensitivity test, which would be like doctor's data or, but I'm going to pull out my herbal antibiotics book. From Stephen Herod Bruner, great
book. Oh, yes, good one.
But if you look up Enterobacter, by the way, Enterobacter tends to be an opportunist, and it tends to be one of those nosocomial things that you get when they go into the hospital. Was she in the hospital before this all happened, or could this have come?
She had multiple tests in the hospital. And I think that is probably when she picked it up because they talked about the IV cords or all kinds of different things. Right. And one of the things that Steph mentioned was that she had never seen a plus four. She'd never seen anything that high.
Yeah, that's really high.
Now so we, and there's nothing else, which is probably good. So we just need to get this guy under control. And she also mentioned that it is an adaptogenic kind of fellow that will influence other ones as well.
That's right.
And so she really was thinking the 3-3-3 was a good approach because you get off of it, you give the system a break so they don't get used to it. But we didn't get a chance to talk about the cryptolasis, whatever that's pronounced.
Cryptolepsis. Yeah, it's one of the best ones, and it's good for other stuff as well. So this, like Klebsiella, which will oftentimes accompany this or come as a result of treating it. Let me just look up, see if there's anything else he lists. Okay. Let me just find his chapter on intro. Factor cryptolepsis. He's got chapters that are by the herb, so cryptolepsis for sure. Okay, here we go. Escherichia, Campylobacter, E. coli. I got all these marks in this book from looking at it for various folks.
I ordered that book, but I...
Definitely worth having. Everybody that doesn't have it, it's like a $14 book, and it's like really worthwhile. Let me just...
His last name is spelled how?
B-U-H-N-E-R, Herbal Antibiotics.
Yeah.
That's $24.95, but on Amazon, it's usually, you know, $40 off or whatever.
That's the same one.
Yeah. Mycobacteria, Clostridia. Where is there's a whole section on it. I'm not having a hard time finding it. Maybe it's just I have to look up the generic of Enterobacter. Because I know he had a whole chapter. Ah, here we go. Enterobacter species. And then he has the different ones. So 4153. Let's see if we talk about the...
So would I be correct to assume with this Enterobacter working, so we are not getting all of the vitamins and minerals and everything that's going into the digestive system?
Not necessarily, because that's not necessarily true, because the Enterobacter would be living more in the large intestine, not the small intestine.
Right.
Right. So you might be, it's definitely would contribute to the diarrhea for sure. Right. You've got that under control.
Yes. Finally.
Yeah. But it took a while.
27 days.
Right. After this was, how long after this happened, this test was taken, did it stop?
We were a couple, well, we had to wait till we got some firm stool before we could do the test. So probably about 7 to 10 days after the diarrhea was kind of under control. So it was probably very prevalent.
Okay.
Very strong. Now, also, can this move up into the small intestine?
I mean, anything can, right? So if you've got an ileocecal valve that's not patent,
right?
If it opens up and doesn't close back down, you can have backflow. So for sure you can. Yes.
Could that be the reason that it's a +4, that it has moved, or do we not know? Or...
I don't think we can know that. I don't think we can know that. Yeah.
So we'll just treat what we think.
Does she get a lot of SIBO-type symptoms, that immediate bloating gas after, you know?
She has, but the last week and a half, it's been better since we got her on the low FODMAP diet.
Okay. Yeah, so it is possible that that's happening. Oftentimes we see Klebsiella or Enterobacter in SIBO type situation. So if you're suspecting that, I would be looking at her for, you know, making sure she's got the movement, the motility. You can look at things like Modal Pro, or you can, from Pure Encapsulations, you can look at things like Trafala or Amla.
Trafala, okay.
Trafala is one of the best. I mean, it's an Ayurvedic herb that has, it's a combination of three different Ayurvedic herbs. It'd be phenomenal for gut stuff.
Okay.
That's getting back to what else to use for the Enterobacter for, there's certainly biocidin, but that's a combination formula and it's pretty strong. And I think it's too strong for her in this situation right now. So you got the berberine, you've got the cryptolysis you want to do ongoing. What was the third one? The rosemary that you're trying to avoid.
And the rosemary. Cinnamon. Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Rosemary.
There you go. Cinnamon.
And she liked that. She felt good with the cinnamon.
Okay.
Golden didn't bother her too much. It's just really bitter.
Yeah, it is bitter. It's hard to take. What about... I mean, grapefruit, I'm thinking of the things that show up oftentimes when I do those stool culture with sensitivities. Uva ursi is one that's a possibility. Let's just see if Uva ursi has any help with, has any known help with, let's see.
As she improves, will the rosemary be something that maybe she can take?
Yeah, the other thing you might look at is like something like, well, slippery elm is not low FODMAP, but it's soothing to her gut. So you might have her take rosemary with something that has a little more mucilage.
Okay, yeah,
she has. As long as the mucilage doesn't bloat her.
Okay. Okay.
Enterobacter, let's see. I'm just doing a quick search. Okay. Yeah, there are resistant ones that are there. These guys are resistant to the antibiotics.
Yeah. Well, we'll stay with this protocol.
And yeah, I think what the best, you know, keeping in mind things that are not too pungent.
Right. Or,
it is a common rosemary
isn't too bad.
Say it again?
The rosemary's not as bad as some of the others. She can't tolerate oregano or some of the others.
It's strong. You know what I find, though, too, because oregano gets so overused, that most people are resistant when I look at those culture tests. So you might want to do this a little bit longer. If you feel like you're not getting anywhere, then you can do the test like with the doctor's data.
Okay.
Where they do the sensitivity.
So on the rotation of 5 days of each one of them and then stop for a week, would you do that a couple of times? She's just finishing one rotation of five.
I would say usually 2 to 3 times.
Okay. We'll do that and see how that works.
Yeah, and see how that works.
We've just finished one, and we'll do it a couple more times. And then the cryptolacet she just got, so she's just starting it.
Yeah. And work up slowly. Don't go right to the whatever 30-drop dose that they recommend.
We start with one the first day.
Uh-huh.
Sensitive about that stomach flipping out again. So yeah, we'll just start with.
So look at like even a little bit of slippery elm, even though it's not low FODMAP. She, you know, it's so I would not. I would just try it. If it bothers her, then don't do it. But I mean, anytime you do something like precede that's a little bit spicier, precede it with something that's going to soothe.
Okay.
Yeah, and if she's getting that, then there might be something to use on a regular basis, as long, assuming she doesn't get bloated or anything from it.
Okay.
Okay. And that's the thing with the low FODMAPs. Everybody thinks it's like you go on it and you have to be 100%. No, you do it to tolerance. You really do it to what the person needs or how they react. You don't want to just say, oh, yeah, low FODMAPs. Let's do that for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. Not a good idea. And how low is low? Like some people have to be super low. Some people don't. It's just a matter of finding what works for her and then sticking with it and then adapting it when it's no longer working.
Okay.
So I'm going to look at her Hakala. I'm going to have to switch my screen. Let's see if I can do this. New share. And I'll go to this new share here. No, that's not it. Where's that picture? Here it is. All right, so this is small. I'm gonna zoom this in. Let's see, how do I do that? Zoom. There we go. So this is a iodine load test. It looks like
I have to say we didn't do the iodine load because when she had some of her tests done in the hospital, they were really concerned about her initial reaction to some iodine, and they loaded her up with Benadryl and watched her really close.
Oh.
So called Hakla and they said, that's okay. We just need to know, do the test without the load and then we'll read it back as we find it. And so this is what we found.
Okay. So it's, so we have no idea what her levels really are. It's like 0.2. It's at the low end of the range, but that doesn't mean so much. It's usually how much is your body sucking up when you do the load. But her bromine is a little higher than I would like to see it. I'd like to see it, 1 to 2. She's a little high. So looking at, if she was on breads before, she probably gets a good bromide load from bread.
She's been gluten-free for about 8 years.
Oh, 8 years. Okay.
Yeah, she's really sensitive to gluten and dairy-free.
And she's been dairy-free for that long as well?
About 4 years on the dairy.
Okay. I mean, none of these things, well, no, I should say that the chloride is high.
Yes.
Yeah, so does she drink chlorinated water, tap water?
She's been using, no, they're on a well, but I told her she needed to have better water than that because we don't know what's in it.
You know what's in it.
So she was running it through a Brita, the last I heard, so I'm not real sure what to do about her water. Is there a better source than just
Well, Brita is not the best filter. I don't know how much, I'd have to look up the stats on that, but I don't know how much of the chlorine it actually
would. Okay, I'll research that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly better than the straight from the tap or straight from the well, but I'd look into that. What other sources of chloride would she have? Does she swim a lot?
Nope.
No.
No swimmer.
Yeah, so it's most likely in the water, and it may be this that, you know, she might drink from the filter, but when she cooks or makes, you know, various soups or whatever else, she may just use the tap, and that's what a lot of people do.
Okay.
You can have her water, her well water tested.
I think we'll do that.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a little environmental looking around for.
Yeah. Well, you know, what kind of cleaning products is she using?
Right.
Is she using Clorox? Is she washing her clothes and putting bleach in?
I don't think so, but I don't know.
Yeah. And some people use, you know, they don't realize what their cleaning supplies are. So I'd really look at that because this could interfere with her thyroid function.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Okay?
Very good. I haven't brought her all the way up on the adrenal protocol to more than 12 drops of the pregnenolone and 2 on the DHEA, 3 times a day. Is that a good holding place? Probably.
No, that's a good holding. If you're doing that 3 times a day, that's a very good holding place.
Okay. And we added the DIM, and that's just once a day. Is it probably sufficient with the DIM?
You know, I can't remember her ratios. Were they way off the charts? I
don't know. It was quite a ways off, and that's why we added DIM.
Yeah.
I just on the minimum.
Yeah, so, you know, just go with where she's at right now, and if she can add it more, then you can add more. Calcium D-glucarate with that can be helpful as well.
Okay.
For bringing those levels down.
Glucarate, okay. And we added the Progon-L also, and she's up at 3 drops on that, which might be sufficient for right now.
Okay. Yeah, the best way to know, right, keep her on something that she's tolerating, and then go back in 3 months and redo the testing.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And if you're going to redo the stool testing, you know, get your protocol going, but I would redo it with one of the ones that has a sensitivity.
Redo it with one that has.
Instead of doing the BioHealth again, because you're really going for the H, because BioHealth has the best in the H. pylori that seemed to turn out negative.
Okay.
But like the doctor's data, that's the one I usually use.
Okay. Do doctor data next time. Okay. We'll do that in a couple months.
That way you can tell.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you for the update.
You're very welcome. So anybody have questions about either the cases that we just went over or about anything at all? Let me look at
When I was looking for Janet's, I saw that Isabel had submitted one. It must have been last night. So I have uploaded that while you were talking to Janet.
Okay.
Into the Dropbox.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Is that Isabel?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. So I see you have...
Is that a Dutch?
Another Dutch. All right. Let's see. Let me move this back. Let me move the share, new share. We'll go over to this one again. And okay, good. All right. So we'll go get that rid of that one. It's this one. And it's, and then, oh, I'm going to open all three of these. All right. So, all right. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what questions you have or what you need. Do you just want to go over the DNA, the Dutch? Is this yours?
Yes, I'll go over the Dutch. I'm still trying to get all the terms, remember what they mean, like what's free cortisol, like does that, you know, what is free, what is metabolized, kind of get all that term clarified.
Yeah. Yeah. So free is a very small percentage. And that's what most of the tests test is the free. And it tells you what's actively circulating in and being utilized throughout the day. The metabolized is what the body is producing.
Okay. So
I have it. Ideally, we want the ratio, like in the range, we want them to be similar, which would say that you're effectively utilizing. In this particular case, the metabolized is much lower than the utilized. So unlike the case that Chet submitted, in this case, you're basically spending more than you're earning.
Okay.
Okay. Your DHEA looks good, but your cortisol's high. Okay. It's not like overtly high like the other person. It was like way off the charts, but it's definitely up there. Okay.
So I'm not producing in a metabolized means that's what the body is producing. And
it's not that you're not producing enough. It's just that you're spending in proportion to what you're producing more than you should be. You know, it's like the person that goes out with the credit card.
Yeah.
Spending a lot more than they're earning and buys the Porsche instead of the Chevrolet.
Okay.
Right. So you're not at risk now. You're not in adrenal stage 3 at all. You're more in a stage, 2, really. Not so high that it's a 3. I mean, a 1, sorry. It's more of a stage 2, and you're really low in the morning.
Yeah, when I'm sleeping, like that's the sleeping. Waking, it's the sample while I was sleeping.
Yeah, and then it comes up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's low. Yeah. So there's definitely, I'd be looking at what are your stressors. Are you meditating regularly, heart mathing, tapping, anything for stress?
Not regularly.
Okay. So there's number one, right? Because you want to stop spending so much. Okay.
Okay.
Are you having any trouble sleeping?
I noticed that different phases of my period, a week before, I'm having more trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And waking up a little earlier. But after my cycle or the first 2 weeks of my cycle, then I'm sleeping better. So I noticed my sleeping pattern does change a little bit.
Well, let's look at what you've got here. So your testosterone's super low. Your progesterone is almost going into menopausal, and I know you're not anywhere near menopausal age. And your estrogen. Well, you're 46. So you look younger.
Yeah, my mom started early, so I'm thinking.
Yeah, 46 is getting there. But your estrogen is good, but you are definitely estrogen dominant. Estrogen dominant over progesterone, estrogen dominant over testosterone. So the kinds of things that you might see in a situation like that would be that your periods might be scantier. You might see the testosterone in terms of testosterone. You might lift weights but not necessarily put on muscle weight. Lower sex drive, that kind of stuff would be impacted by the low testosterone. Loss of motivation, right? I don't want to get done. I can't get started. That could be low testosterone symptom.
And how is that related to thyroid?
How is it related to thyroid?
Is there a connection?
Not a direct connection. I mean, you could have high sex hormone binding globulin, but this is measuring, free? Yeah, I mean, it's possible that there's some increased sex hormone binding globulin that would be tying up the testosterone, and that also impacts the conversions in the thyroid. But I don't, not off the top of my head, I'm not thinking of a direct connection between the two. Okay. Yeah, but, you know, with precursors, with using a lot for cortisol, with your cortisol being so high, you're actually using a lot of your prenatal precursors, building blocks, which could be stealing away from the progesterone. Yeah. Okay. So you probably would benefit from a little bit of progesterone.
Okay.
Right? At this point, as far as your DHEA is, okay, let's look at some of the other numbers before we talk anything else. But right now I'm thinking that your progesterone supplementation could be helpful. Yeah, and you're pretty close to the same on the alpha and the beta. You know, it's no significant difference, unlike the one we looked at earlier. And they're both putting you pretty much at the bottom of progesterone production. Let's see, your DHEA is higher, your testosterone's lower, so we want to look at some of those pathways between it. If we go down here, well, let me look at this whole thing, and then we can look at that chart, because it's a pain to start to rotate it. So estrone, estradiol, and estriol. So if we add these together, 15, 17, you know, it's 18 and 8, you're more, you need more estriol than you got. I mean, it looks like it's mid-range, a little on the low side of mid-range. It looks like it's just as good as the others. But in terms of the protective effect, we really want to have that estriol to be equal to or more than the sum of the other two.
Okay, so equal to the sum of other two is 18. So
estrone, yes. So you really want that estriol to be up there, or the estrone to be a little bit lower.
Okay.
So let's look at the ratios here. It's actually, you're pretty balanced though, which is good. You know, so you're a little low on the 2, you're a little high on the 4, and a little high on the 16. So you do want to shift that. I'd rather see you higher on the 2 and lower on these two, although the 16-2 ratio is pretty important for bone health. So you don't want it to be too high, because that puts you at risk of breast proliferation. But if it's too low, if you have too little 16, then you run the risk of bone metabolism being altered. So you're good in terms of bone metabolism, and, you know, just slightly high in the 16 and the 4. I would say, you know, increasing your cruciferous, I don't think DIM would be needed here, but increasing your cruciferous, maybe more broccoli sprouts, things like that could be helpful.
Okay.
Let's see, 16. Let's see. And then let's look at the methylation, and then we can go look at the... So methylation-wise, you're actually doing well. Right? See the ratio here? You're on the high end of methylation, which is good. You're methylating well here. I don't know if you have any SNPs with the MTHFR or anything, but you're definitely your COMT, but you're definitely methylating well. Have you done a genetic test on yourself yet?
I did. One of the documents that you saw was the genetic test I did. I did with Great Plains, so their results a little bit different. It's formatted a little bit different.
So is this one?
Yeah, this one.
Okay. So you've got a plus minus on. Say it gives you the RS number rather than the. It's not very good.
Yeah.
If you've got problems with here with, yeah, that, are you taking methylated Bs?
I do from time to time, not regularly.
Okay. Well, your good diet and your taking them time to time is actually making your methylation is actually running well. So you can't just go by genetics to say that somebody's got impaired methylation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't, like, I take it once a week, I forget. So I actually, supplement-wise, not a whole lot.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's clearly, you know, you're considering these are your genes, what you're showing up. I'm assuming they're theirs is the same, like plus plus is the red, right? So
yes.
Wow, holy cow, look at you.
I know. He was like, what the heck?
No. I'm shocked at your fabulous, now I will say, methylation of estrogen, at least, considering these genetics. Holy cow. So your D is super important. I don't know if you've tested it recently, but
I did test. I'm taking supplement. I'm low. I was first time tested. I was in the 20s.
Yeah. So keep testing and upping your dose if needed until you get yourself at least in the 70s.
Okay.
Right? That's going to protect your gut. That's going to protect your hormones, everything. Yeah. Mental health. Let's see. Some of these I don't even know. Oh, fatty acid elongase. You got a lot of histamine issues. Anxiety issues.
I don't have any histamine.
Just allergy. This is the kind of thing where I say epigenetics rocks, right? You are doing some good stuff considering your genes here. Wow. Yeah, and then they just say no disease associated. You can look these CYPs up in my chart that's on the methylation
page.
And see just to limit your exposures to whatever toxins these things really work at. So it's not a disease risk mostly, it's more the pathways that they're expressing in. G6PD, it's G6PD. Sometimes people, and I don't know, the degree of it, but sometimes people with G6PD, you got to be careful about too much IV vitamin C. Like if you're going for IV vitamin C, you'd want to not be doing super high doses of it. Wow. Yeah, I've never seen this test before. They do a lot of genes that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, so I think on here they list all the thing that's wrong with you, and then at the end they test their other genes that they tested. That's nothing, it's.
Oh, okay, so they're just doing it. So I'm thinking that you're just totally messed up.
Yeah, that's why when I first got the report, it's like, oh my god, I'm doomed.
Oh my god, I'm screwed. Oh, oxalate metabolism. Let's look at this. They test a lot of genes. Okay, so oxalates. Wow.
Yeah, my oxalate was high. It was over the roof at one time.
Okay. Do you watch your oxalate intake?
I do a little bit. And then it was my candida at the time. It was high as well. Both the markers were really high. And a year later, I tested. Both of them came down a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
So since then, I kind of loosened up on watching out for oxalate. I need to do one more organic testing to see where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. And just keep it. It's an awareness. So if you develop something and you go, I wonder what that's about, it could be the oxalate buildup. But keeping the gut balanced is important. The oxalobacters and the bifidobacter, they all help contribute to that. You do have the celiac markers. So.
Mm-hmm.
Gluten free.
Yes, I do notice if I do gluten, there is definitely.
Yeah.
Symptoms.
So I would stay away from it. Risk of Crohn's. I mean, you've got a lot of genes. And like I said, I'm not familiar with a lot of these genes. Mm-hmm. Malic acid's important for energy metabolism. And malic acid and magnesium, you can actually supplement with malic acid if you wanted to. It's like a sugar kind of thing. Interpretation, what do they say? Holy cow. You better be careful. Okay, so they give you a description. 53-page report. Holy cow.
Yeah.
How much should they charge for this test?
This one I pay $3.99, and this was a discounted price. I think regularly it's $5.99.
Okay.
$4.99, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Vitamin D receptors, of course. Yeah. Well, and they give you a description. It's a nice test.
gluten sensitivity, lots of gluten sensitivities, cholesterol metabolism. Mm-hmm. So where's the stuff where it says what's not wrong?
At the end, if you just go down a little bit.
Okay, more. Let's see. Well,
yeah.
Oh, they give you the pad. This is a very nice test.
Mm-hmm. Like all these, they tested all these genes and they're, what do you call it, double negative? Is that?
Yeah. That would be just like they call them the wild type normal.
Yeah.
So And it just says appendix. These are the other ones they tested. So. I wish, though, that they didn't just go by the RSIDs, because RSIDs are really hard to memorize, but, you know, MTHFR, you know, 699, that was took me long enough to memorize that one, right? A677T, whatever. But that's not what we recognize them as, right? So it's really hard with the RSIDs. You got to look it up. It's like, which of these MTHFRs is good and which one isn't?
Because
I don't remember the RSIDs. MTR has to do with B12. So, you know, you've got some, they test a lot of genes here.
They did 1,000. It's called like GMP 1,000. Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, you've got a lot of good ones. And then they give you the pathways. So I think this is a great learning tool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah, when I first got the test, I was looking at the first couple pages like,
getting depressed. Right, but it's great pathways. I love it. Wow. And then the whole oxalate metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, B6 and magnesium are super important for eliminating oxalates. So making sure that you keep your levels of B6 and magnesium. Okay, because you can see here with the B6, but magnesium is also important.
Okay, that sounds good. I did submit, I think I submitted too late, I did a GI effect. That's also a test for the gut. And I have like, only thing that stands out is like I have no digestive enzyme.
Pancreatic elastase is very low?
Uh-huh. It's like none. I think I did the same test a year ago or 2 years ago. I have a little bit now. This time it's like none.
None.
Yeah. Didn't detect it.
Well, first of all, you know, the help for that, the symptomatic whatever Band-Aid approach to that is definitely take digestive enzymes or eat living, you know, foods, a lot of fermenteds and things like that that have the enzymes in them. But the question is why? And why is your pancreas low function? Do you find that you have insulin resistance, so your blood sugar is swinging all the time?
No, I've been working on blood sugar, you know, being very careful about what I eat. And my HbA1c, it's 4.8.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah. And I do know that if I eat grain, it'll spike up. It'll spike up to about 130, and it'll come down pretty quickly. So I don't eat grain, a whole lot of grain, or fruit by itself, so I'm very careful.
Yeah.
I found your GI effects, Isabel, and I've uploaded it into the folder.
Yeah, so there, I would be watching that pancreas. So this is a good idea for you to be very careful about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of these genes play in. You'd have to like really pour through the test to see if any of those predispose. GADs sometimes have an effect. GAD, I don't remember seeing that one, but that one could have an effect. But yeah, I mean, you're doing really well in spite of your genetics. And that's something to warn your kids about. I don't know if you've done these tests on them. It's like, you know what? You know, mom's not just a kook being real careful about diet. We've got these genetic issues. And look, your mom, right? She had some issues that went undetected.
Mm-hmm.
So this is good that you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah, so I have Brandon's tested. So I ran his through Stargen. Is that Stratagen?
Oh, Stratagen, yeah.
Stratagen. And it's just much harder to read. So I haven't gotten there yet to kind of decipher his gene. I've looked at the used what you have, what you, your
charts,
your charts, and then interpret some of it.
Yeah, I need to, you know, we need to hire somebody to work on more charts because some of those tests are really hard to interpret. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm almost out of time for this call, and I have another call coming up, but I'm looking at here. Your melatonin's low.
Yes.
So you do all the things you know of that we've talked about in other places for raising your melatonin, and your cortisone is not too bad. But I do whatever it takes to bring the stress levels down. There's no particular time I wouldn't recommend necessarily phosphatidylserine, but maybe some of the calming herbs and making sure that, you know, you're doing your meditation or your heart math or whatever your stress busting piece of choice is can be really important for you just to keep your reserves.
Okay.
Okay.
Testosterone, what would be some of the...
Well, that's what I wanted to look at this real quick because I got to get on another call. View, page rotation, counterclockwise. Okay, so if we look at testosterone being low, we go, okay, why is testosterone being low? What's happening? Progesterone is low. Progesterone is converted into testosterone, right? DHEA is decent and it goes downstream to testosterone. But it's possible, and then your estrogens are okay. It's possible you're aromatasing it, and which means converting it to estrogen. So you might want to look at it, aromatase inhibitors, nettles. What's some of the other aromatase inhibitors? Drawing a blank on right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, look at the aromatase inhibitors. There should be right here. Oh, they don't show them here, do they? Right. Just look up aromatase inhibitors, but nettles is one of them.
Okay.
Okay. And so really look at not converting so much of your testosterone to estrogen. So if you look at your overall from the start, convert back, rotate view, clockwise. Yeah. If you look, right, estrogen's the highest of all your sex hormones, right? So testosterone is maybe over converting there. You'd be lower, so precursors pregnenolone might be helpful for you, but I'd also do it in combination with some aromatase inhibitors.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Glad you are here, and we'll talk again probably soon, sooner rather than later. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Bye.